Welcome to the Food for Your Soul podcast, where we apply the Word of God to the hearts of men and women to stoke the fires of your delight in Christ.
This season of the Food for Your Soul podcast is all about self-control, and what we've been doing the last couple days is diagnosing the problems of the inner man. We're learning how to diagnose, because you can't cure a disease until you can get to the bottom of the cause. So we found some general things last time, and the problem is in the inner man. We can't blame people or circumstances or anything else. It's our hearts where the sin always originates. Now we want to dig a little deeper and see how the process of temptation actually works from beginning to end. And so we're back in James chapter 1. I'm going to read verses 13 through 15 to you. And I'd like you to pay close attention to the richness and complexity of the mixed metaphor that James gives us here. Verse 13, when tempted, no one should say, God is tempting me, for God cannot be tempted by evil, nor does he tempt anyone. But each one is tempted when by his own evil desires he is dragged away and enticed. And then, after desire has conceived, it gives birth to sin. And sin, when it is full grown, gives birth to death.
Last week I saw a product on TV that was a new invention. It was a kitchen canister with a locking top and a timer. So the idea is, it's for temptation. It's for resisting temptation. So the idea is you bake a batch of cookies, you have one or two, then you put the rest of them in this canister and lock it. And there's no override. There's no way to get to it until the prescribed time. I think that's a great idea. Instead of buying ice cream and then throwing half of it away because you don't want the temptation in the house, you just put that thing in that container and set it so it won't unlock at 10:30 at night when the craving hits, you know? I think if my family saw that thing, they would probably buy some. Not so much for their temptations, but for mine. So they could bring home some leftovers from a restaurant. They have to worry about Dad having it for lunch the next day. But they talked about, you know, you can put a game controller in there or a TV remote or whatever you have a problem with temptation. And I saw that and I thought there's a market for that. And there's a reason. The reason there is a market for a product like that is because the problem of temptation is just absolutely universal. They weren't just marketing that for Christians. It's one thing all human beings have in common. Christians, non-Christians, secularists, atheists, no matter what people believe, every single human being finds himself or herself doing things that they wish they wouldn't do. I wish I could stop this. You know, people will walk away from Christianity. They'll reject religion because they say, that is too restrictive. I don't want to be bound by rules. And so they invent some other standard. They say, I'm going to live in freedom. And so they come up with some other way of living, but no matter how free it is, no matter how lenient and how relaxed their standard is, still they find themselves saying, man, I wish I could stop doing this thing, and they keep doing it. They say, this thing's ruining my life. I got to stop. It's costing me too much money. I got to stop. And they keep doing it. The whole human race is plagued with temptation. Someone once said, I can resist anything but temptation. And that's a humorous statement, but it brings up a profound question. What is it that gives temptation so much power? Why can't we resist it? I mean, we have free will, right? We can decide. Why are there situations where people say, this is ruining my marriage. It's ruining my life, destroying my body. It's taking all my time and money. I hate it. I wish I would never do it again. And they're sincere. I mean, they'll enroll in programs, they'll buy a canister that'll lock, if they could do that to get rid of a temptation, they would do it. And yet, when temptation hits, all that resolve is just out the window and they cave in like a house of cards. Why? What gives temptation that much power? It's one of the most powerful forces known to man. Temptation has brought down the mightiest warriors, most disciplined people. Proverbs 7:26 says, her slain are like a mighty throng. You look over the battlefield of human history, temptation stands there, as it were, with blood dripping from her sword, looking over the corpses of millions of the strongest men and women ever born, and she boasts, I defeated them all. Kings and presidents have been willing to risk all their power and position and reputation for a moment of pleasure promised by temptation. Men and women have sacrificed their children, their marriages, placed every dime to their name plus thousands that they borrowed on a poker table, all because temptation gave the order. Where does temptation get that kind of power? And why is it that I can say no to 100 other desirable things with no problem, but not this one thing? Certain things seem to get me. Why? Our sin is not God's fault. It's not other people's fault. It's not the weather's fault. It's not hormones' fault. If we're looking for someone to blame, the place to look is in the mirror. So, why does James tell us all this? Does he just want us to get even more discouraged and down on yourself than you already were? No. No, it's not. He's not trying to get you depressed here. James tells us this because he wants you to have victory. And that's not going to happen until you understand something about what powers and fuels temptation. Do something about renegade desires. Hit the power plant. And if you do that, Satan's enticements won't work on you in that area. But if those desires remain, then Satan, or no Satan, you're going to fall over and over and over and over. So how does it all work? I mean, exactly how does this work? Because we know desire by itself is not a bad thing, right? It's a good thing. It's a wonderful thing. Desire is a great gift from God. It's what powers your life. It's the batteries of life. It keeps you moving. But when it goes bad, then it can turn into our worst enemy. So what makes desire go bad? James uses two words here from the hunting and fishing world in verse 14. He says, when tempted... each one is tempted when, by his own desire, he's dragged away and enticed. Now, that word dragged away could also be translated drawn out, and I think that's probably the better translation here. The picture is of an animal being drawn out of its lair or its place of safety. And then the word enticed is to capture with bait. So the idea is a fish might be hiding way down deep underneath a big boulder, away, predators can't see it, nobody can get to it, it's safe. A fox will go down inside a hole, it's safe. A deer will run into the real thick timber, it's safe. And as long as they stay in there, they're safe, but when they get drawn out of there into the open, and then they're vulnerable, they can get lured into a trap with some bait. And that's the second word, enticed, lured with bait. That's what temptation is. That's what temptation is. It's bait on a hook. It's a baited hook. That's temptation. And it seems to me that in all our temptations, there's really only two kinds of bait that Satan uses. Pleasure and avoidance of pain. I think that pretty much covers it, right? Now, is bait evil? Is bait the problem? No. If you're a fish, the problem is not the worm. It's the hook, right? Yeah. The desire for pleasure and the desire to avoid pain are fine. They're the very same motivations that God uses many times in Scripture to motivate us to go His way. Temptation happens when one of those things, desire for pleasure, desire to avoid pain, attaches to something that God has forbidden, some hook. A couple weeks ago, I was staying up in a cabin in Estes Park, and I woke up in the morning, and as soon as I opened my eyes, I looked out the window, and I saw this deer, just right at dawn, this deer walking through the woods. And I'm a hunter. To me, spotting a deer in the woods and getting a good shot off is just a very exciting, exhilarating thing. If you're not a hunter, you just trust me on that. It's fun for me. Now, is there anything inherently wrong with the desire for me to feel the thrill of that of hunting? The answer is no. There's nothing wrong with that. God let us do that. But in this particular case, that very legitimate desire for pleasure happened to be attached to something that was off limits. I didn't have a license, it wasn't hunting season, and I was in a residential area. So shooting this deer in that context was just like all kinds of illegal, right? So the bait was the desire to hunt, which isn't a bad thing. The hook was, in this particular case, the only way to fulfill my desire would have been to cross the line and do some sinful action. That's the way it works. It's fine to desire money, but if getting it requires some sin, it's bait on a hook. It's fine to desire sex, but if it's with someone that you're not married to, it's bait on a hook. It's fine to desire respect, but if it requires boasting to get it, it's bait on a hook. So this is the picture that James paints for us. You're safe and secure in your hole, in your lair, in God's righteous path. You're safe. Nothing can touch you there. You experience pain there, but nothing can actually hurt you, ultimately hurt you, cause you harm. Even the pain you experience there does you only good. So you're perfectly safe as long as you stay in the security of God's path. But desire can lure you out of that safe place. And it can entice you to go for the bait and bite down on the hook or get caught in a trap. Now, this question. Why does that happen in some cases and not in other cases? My desire to hunt that deer was a strong desire. I really would have liked to go after that thing. But it was actually a piece of cake for me to resist that temptation. It was very easy. Even if I would have had my rifle with me, the idea of shooting that deer in that context, absolutely out of the question. I wouldn't even have considered it for a moment. And that's the way it is for you, for the vast majority of your temptations. They're a piece of cake. You see an old lady put a $100 bill in her purse, and you think, well, I sure wouldn't mind having $100. But that's as far as it goes. Suppose Satan put the thought in your mind, you know what, just take it from her. You're stronger than her, just take it. If that came into your mind, you just dismiss it as fast as it came in your mind. It's like, no, it's a non-starter. I'm not even going to consider that. When you think of evil things, things like, you know, armed robbery or beating someone to death or kidnapping or whatever, there's all kinds of sins that are so repulsive to you that even if you strongly desire something that's available only if you commit that sin, still, it's out of the question. You wouldn't even consider it for a moment. If the thought comes into your mind, you'd be shocked and horrified that it even came into your mind, and you just reject it instantly. No argument, no internal debate. The answer is just no, end of discussion. Right? That's the way a healthy heart functions, but there are some areas, certain areas where our hearts aren't healthy. There's certain sins where our shock reflex against it is just broken. The temptation barges in, and instead of being horrified and disgusted, your heart says, oh, hello there. So you're sinful, are you? You don't look sinful. You don't really seem sinful. And the desire said, well, do I have to leave? No, you can hang around. I mean, I'm not going to talk to you right now, but just hang around. I need to think this over. There are certain sins, they don't shock us, they don't repulse us, they don't grate against our soul. And so if there's something that I really want, really desire, and I have to just commit that sin in order to get it, it's an option. It's on the table. I'm not going to rule it out right just yet. Your desires don't have the power to do anything to drag you towards sin without your consent. And when we give our consent, it's always because we don't see that particular sin as being evil enough. Our shock reflex is just broken on that thing. It doesn't strike a chord. You know, if I walk up to it does strike a chord. It strikes a chord in our heart, and that's why there's a responsiveness to it. If I took my trumpet and walked up to a piano and just played a note and then stopped playing, as soon as I stop, you'll hear that same note ringing inside the piano. Just that note. The sound waves vibrating at that particular frequency vibrate the one string in the piano that happens to vibrate at that frequency. And it doesn't affect any other strings, just the one string. And so you hear that note. I walk up, play a concert B-flat, boom. You hear a concert B-flat being ringing from the piano. The way Satan tempts us is by simply playing the note of some particular sin and then listening carefully to see if there's a string inside our hearts that resonates, that's still ringing. Is there something in us that vibrates at that same frequency? What happens when the world plays the get drunk or get high on something note? For some of you, that strikes a chord. For others of you, nothing. You don't have that string. You don't have anything at this time in your life that vibrates at that particular frequency, and so it has no effect on you. And so the temptation doesn't work on you. When the selfishness note or the pride note or the irritability note gets played, maybe it does have a response. Maybe you do have those strings in you. We all have different points of weakness, right? So how do we solve the problem of having these strings in us that resonate to certain kinds of sins? What do I do about my desire disorders? And my hatred of sin disorders? Well, James gives us some priceless insight on this in verse 15 where he changes the metaphor. Now he's going to shift to another metaphor. He leaves the hunting and fishing thing and describes now desire in terms of a woman getting pregnant. Verse 15. He says, then after desire has conceived, it gives birth to sin. To conceive means to get pregnant. So at what point does desire in your heart get pregnant with sin? That's the picture. And the answer is in verse 14. It happens when you get drawn out and enticed. And if you look carefully at verse 14 and then verse 15, literally, verse 15 is literally, then desire, having conceived, gives birth to sin. So grammatically, James, the grammar he uses requires that being drawn out and enticed is the same thing as becoming pregnant. He's just jumping metaphors, but he's saying these two things are the same. Okay? Being drawn out of your place of safety by your desires, that's the same thing as getting your desires pregnant with sin. When you allow desire to do that, when you allow a desire to draw you out of the place of safety and start going after the bait, that's the moment when your desire becomes pregnant with sin. That's where sin comes into existence. That's all it takes to conceive sin. You want something? And see, this is why so many people have trouble with sin, because they're not even dealing with sin until the point of delivery, instead of dealing with it preventing conception. When you want something, you realize that getting that thing would have to involve some sin, and instead of the normal reaction of, well, that's absolutely out of the question, it remains on the table as an option. Boom, your desire just got pregnant with sin. When Satan tempted Jesus in the wilderness, Jesus' desires for the things that Satan were offering were very strong. He was very hungry. He wanted bread. But he didn't allow himself to be drawn off the path of safety to bite down on the hook of sin. I had the desire that day to hunt that deer out of season, but that desire didn't become pregnant with sin at all, because it didn't strike a powerful enough chord in my heart to lure me out of the place of safety and be willing to commit that sin. But what about those ones that do strike that chord in my heart? How do I get rid of those responsive strings? They don't seem to be horrified at the idea of committing a certain sin. James is going to answer that in verses 16 to 18.
Okay, in the days to come, we're going to be looking at how to change those responsive strings so that they're not so responsive to certain temptations. We'll get into that, especially next time. Tomorrow's podcast, we're going to be talking about this metaphor of sin becoming pregnant, conceiving. It's a childbirth metaphor, and we're going to find that those sins have a mother and a father. And it's when you find out what the father is that will really help you get a grasp of how this whole process works. So that'll be tomorrow. In the meantime, for today, just take some time and ask, which strings in the piano of your heart are responsive to sinful impulses, temptations? It should be encouraging to us the fact that most evils in this world don't strike a responsive chord in your heart. That's wonderful. But there are some that do. Take a minute to jot down which ones. What are those responsive strings? So that in the weeks to come, you'll know what you're dealing with.
Thank you for listening. Our prayer is that this season of the Food for Your Soul podcast will help you tap into deeper and deeper experiences of the fruit of the Spirit, especially self-control. Your thoughts about the materials in these studies are important to us, and they may be helpful for others as well. A link to this podcast is posted on the Food for Your Soul Facebook page every weekday morning. You're invited to follow that page and post your reactions to that day's content. Your perspectives might be just what someone else needs to gain insight. And when a session is especially helpful, feel free to click on the share button so others can find it too.
This content has been provided to you free of charge by the generous supporters of Food for Your Soul Ministries. For information on how you can support Food for Your Soul, visit us online at treasuringgod.com. There you'll find over 1,000 sermons, as well as articles, books, and many other resources, all available for free download.
Until next time, rejoice in the Lord always, and set your mind on things above, where Christ is seated at the right hand of God.